Today, Books on U.S. Presidents with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Melanie Lowers, books editor at the Cape Cod Times. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. And we're just coming off an historic presidential election this year. We also celebrate the 200th birthday of President Abraham Lincoln. So I would imagine lots of books on these two presidents.
Lots and lots. Lots and lots.
We could have done the whole show just on that, but you picked a couple of books.
I did. And I'll start this. Actually, this is not about Barack Obama, but this is inspired by Barack Obama and hastened to the printer, shall we say. It's called Yes, We Can, 365 Ways to Make America a Better Place. And it's as catchy as you can possibly get. And the author's name is Paula Munier, M-U-N-I-E-R, and she lives on the South Shore, although I'm not exactly sure where. But she kind of bases this entire book on this quote that Obama made almost a year ago in the run for the presidency, that change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for, and we are the change that we seek. And everybody thought that was kind of, you know, very over the top.
But I like it too.
But what she does with it, it's sort of that old-fashioned grassroots activism. And she lists all kinds of things, really 365, which is kind of cute, cutesy, I should say. But it's loaded with practical things you could do that by your action would improve some aspect of how we live or how we function as a democracy or just how our neighborhoods and communities function. And so I thought it was kind of clever. Yeah. And I actually found it to be... I found it to be very useful. Like, you could open this book frequently throughout the year and find some other tip, something that you could be actively doing.
And I find it interesting because, Jill, you also did not bring a book about Barack Obama, but about the job ahead of him.
That's right, because we're all getting ready for this inauguration. I know I'm taking the day off. I'm very excited. And but what he has ahead of him, as we all know, is a very daunting process. But there's this fabulous little book that's come out by a guy named Stephen Hess called What Do We Do Now? A Workbook for the President-Elect. And it's quite that. And it tells you everything that the transition of power has to happen in order for that to go smoothly, and the kind of decisions that the president-elect has to make before he gets to the White House. And I found it absolutely fascinating. Things that you might not think about, like how to pick out a desk, which desk you might want in your White House. And they give a choice of, you know, you got like these five choices, or you can bring your own if you want to. But most presidents have one of these historic desks that they bring. So he tells you all of the desks. He tells you which portraits you might have in the Oval Office and which presidents have picked which Oval Offices. But it goes through step by step through the transition. And then there are things like getting rid of deadwood. If you are like most presidents before you, you will be notoriously bad at firing people. Mm. And then he goes on to say how you can fire these people and what kind of jobs you can give them after you fire them so they don't feel bad and then go out and write a tell-all book about you and how you don't, and all the dangers of having people write books about you are in here. It's just an amazing collection
of facts. And a lot
of
things that we wouldn't think about that's involved in this whole process.
That's absolutely right. And he has an inauguration ceremony checklist. He talks about the speech and what you have to do in the speech. And he says, Mr. President, it would be wonderful if you deliver a great inaugural address. But if you don't, take comfort. Very few of your predecessors did. In fact, as the history books often point out, the inaugural address that had the most immediate effect was certainly one of the worst. 68-year-old William Henry Harrison spoke for nearly 2 hours at 8,445 words, also the longest ever address, on a snowy day in March 1841. He caught cold and died of pneumonia a month later.
So don't make your speech too long.
So this is, and it tells you, it shows you where everybody sits in the cabinet, who the press corps is right now, and where they sit. It's really a fascinating little book, and it's short. It's very pithy, but short.
Easy read and informative.
I like that idea of finding jobs for the people you don't want writing books, because apparently that has not happened in the Bush administration.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, Jill, before we went on the air that I think is worth reiterating is that Barack Obama really has a lot of impact on what people are reading right now. He mentioned on a 60 Minutes interview a book on FDR. And that's boosted all of these authors who have written books on FDR.
That's right. There was this great article written in the New York Times called "For Books Is Obama the New Oprah?" And because he sort of offhandedly mentioned this book. Not really. I mean, what's sort of interesting about this is he didn't even realize what the impact of mentioning, offhandedly mentioning this book. So he mentions this book about FDR's first 100 days. And immediately there are like four publishers who are going, they were sure it was their book, yeah. You know? Although it turned out that the book, in fact, he was mentioning was The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope by Jonathan Alter, which is a lovely book, and we've been getting, of course, lots of requests for this. But there is another book called FDR, The First 100 Days by Anthony Badger, which was not the book that he was mentioning, but is getting a bounce because he mentioned it.
That, yeah.
And I have to say, as a librarian, and a reader, I'm like incredibly excited that we have a reader in the White House. And his wife is a reader as well, we understand. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested in knowing what she's going to be reading.
I bet a lot of people would be interested in what
I hope someone keeps track of it. Actually, I'm sure that as being an area maybe of his website. What's the president reading?
Absolutely.
What am I reading now?
And the First Lady. Well, getting back to Abraham Lincoln, 200th birthday, and we've already got quite a few books out there.
There's going to be an avalanche of Lincoln books.
There has been an avalanche.
And the events and everything else going on. And the amazing thing that they coincide, this inauguration and this president who is one of the most beloved in history and who had a vision of some sort. I'm going to give him more vision than he had, but he had a vision of some sort, and we're seeing one of the endpoints of that first step now with Barack Obama taking the presidency.
Well, and in fact, Obama is going to have his hand on Lincoln's Bible.
Yeah. Both from Illinois, both tall and skinny.
There was something in the Globe yesterday that was comparing the similarities. Yeah,
yeah.
The Lincoln Bible has not been used in quite a while. They took it out of the Library of Congress, out of the National Archives. But these two books that just arrived a little while ago, actually the first one arrived last fall. It's a new biography by Fred Kaplan, a well-known American biographer who lives up in Maine, and it's called Lincoln, The Biography of a Writer. And Kaplan argues that Lincoln was by far our most literate president, and he had a literary career that is inseparable from his life story. An admirer and avid reader of Burns, Byron, Shakespeare, and the Old Testament, Lincoln was the most literary and actually used these famous writers to sort of infuse his own writing and his own words with this literary quality. Wow. And Kaplan starts at the beginning of Lincoln's life in terms of how he was educated and self-educated. And that's how he acquired this love of language along with the love of law and everything else.
And so evident in his speeches. I mean, Lincoln really wrote some wonderful speeches.
We turn to them over and over again for inspiration. Not just because of their meaning, but also in terms of their structure and wordplay and the beauty of them, the lyrical quality of some of them. And I think that just says so much after, 140 going on 150 years. The second book that just arrived is a book called Mrs. Lincoln, A Life by Catherine Clinton. And Clinton wrote a book I remember seeing, Harriet Tubman, The Road to Freedom. It was named one of the best nonfiction books of 2004. Now she's written another biography of Mrs. Lincoln, who obviously has had a lot of biographies written about her. But I think that with each one, a little more historical record gets included, a little more understanding of the personality of Mrs. Lincoln, which was complex.
It
caused all kinds of issues during Lincoln's presidency. It caused all kinds of issues with the national press. It caused family issues that continued well after Lincoln's death and up to her own, which was, I think she was a widow for almost 20 years, which is a long time to be in the national eye in that way. And so I think every biography, if you've read some of her before, it's not a bad idea to go back and read a fresh one because my guess would be there's more information always coming out.
Exactly.
Well, I've brought a couple of Lincoln books as well. And a couple of these are nice because they're just little snippets. You don't have to read the whole biography again. This one is called Our Lincoln, New Perspectives on Lincoln and His World, edited by Eric Foner. And all of these American historians have come together and done a each an essay on something, some aspect of Lincoln's life. So it's a nice collection because you can, again, just sort of read one piece of it. You don't have to read the whole thing. And it's broken up into parts: the president, the emancipator, the man, and politics and memory is the last article. And they're very nice articles. C-SPAN has also come out with a book, which is sort of interesting. This is actually, and it's an odd thing they've done here, but interesting nonetheless. It's called a C-SPAN book, Abraham Lincoln, Great American Historians on Our 16th President. And what they have done is actually taken interviews with all of these various people, authors that they've mm-hmm. interviewed over the years, and picked out the sections, that things they've said about Lincoln. So you have all kinds of little snippets about Lincoln, but it's done from their interviews. So it's a little awkward in that they weren't actually written as essays, but they sort of have reformatted them as essays. So it is a great overall collection of essays having to do with Lincoln's overall life and his presidency. Now, there's one other I brought with me, which actually came out a little while ago, and it's what you might call a micro history. These histories that are, they pick some one little small aspect and they go with it. And this one is called Stealing Lincoln's Body. Mm. On the night of the presidential election in 1876, a gang of counterfeiters out of Chicago attempted to steal the entombed, embalmed body of Abraham Lincoln and hold it for ransom. The custodian of the tomb was so shaken by the incident that he willingly dedicated the rest of his life to protecting the president's corpse. And this author, Thomas Crowell, has written, as I say, this micro history just about this. And as in one review, it said, the plot that gives Stealing Lincoln's Body its title, hatched by a crew of hapless Irish publicans and counterfeiters in Chicago, unfolds with equal doses of Martin Scorsese and the Three Stooges. The fecklessness of the robbery nearly trumped by that of the cops on election night 1876, more than a decade after the president's assassination. It is a marvelous look into Gilded Age America and the wellsprings of many of our modern vexations, immigrant and urban culture, robber barons and financial hoodlums, the bread and circuses, numbing of the electorate, political scandal and presidential intrigues. The war between the ridiculous and the sublime that seems to infect our nations are all subtext to this readable book. And it's a short book as well. So again, if you don't have a lot of time, Stealing Lincoln's Body would be a fun short read.
I see a movie. I see a movie.
We're talking about books on U.S. presidents with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Melanie Lowers, books editor at the Cape Cod Times. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to chime in, 866-999-4626. Perhaps you'd like to share with us what's on your reading list for 2009. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Let's just jump ahead to kids' books here, because you each brought one with you. And mm-hmm. and Jill, I'm going to start with you because I love the cover of this book.
This picture book is called Grace for President. And Grace is a little girl who decides that her class is going to have an election. And they begin this book with showing her first question is the teacher holds up this picture of all the presidents of the United States, and Grace's first question is, where are the girls?
Which you can see
and
a girl
you can
saying,
see
yeah.
how you might wonder about that. Anyway, they then go on, the class holds an election and Grace runs for president, but she's running against a little boy who has a lot of friends.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. And you've brought...
Well, this very unusual book I discovered the other day, it's called Who's Haunting the White House?
Oh, interesting.
The President's Mansion and the Ghosts Who Live There.
This is a picture book?
This is a picture book with history written
in. Yeah.
And it's by a guy named Jeff Bellinger, who was the founder of ghostvillage.com. He's got a specialty interest going here. But what I found in the book was this sort of the idea of the play on ghosts in two ways. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, people have said that they encountered
ghosts,
you know, various
House, yes.
apparitions or whatever during their stays in the White House. So that's something that's been pervasive over the years. At the same time, there's sort of the historical background that's always in place, that you walk into a room and that room was used for a specific...
You feel the history.
Right. You feel the history. You almost have a sense of the people still being there. Mm-hmm. So there's a play on that too. But the interesting stories are that a lot of these are people who worked in the White House and actually had some of these these experiences and pass them on. Yeah. So I thought, well, it's not mainstream by any means, but it's kind of fun and the history is solid.
Right.
So if you were looking for a different angle, yeah, or you were planning a trip, for example, in April down there, and you know you'd been there many times or something, this might be a different way to approach the White House.
Yeah, and Melanie, before we went on the air, we were chatting a little bit, and we were talking about there's so many books on presidents coming out and that are already out. And you mentioned that we've had a lot of time, 8 years, to think about what we want in a president.
Yes, we have. I think in the past, one of the things we were saying was that in the past, we had an assumption that whoever got the job, whether we liked them or not or voted for them or not, would rise to the job, rise to the office, and would be shaped by the office. And for the most part, we'd be okay at the end of a 4-year or 8-year term. I think one of the things that we've been surprised by, and this has certainly happened in past generations, but not recently, is that sometimes the office does not shape the person as much as we would like. The person shapes the office. And we've had 8 years now to think about how George W. Bush has shaped the office, and where there was certainly support for him at the beginning of his first term and the beginning of his second term. By the end of his second term, it was a real disparity there between those who still supported him and the vast majority of Americans who no longer did in any way. And so what we have coming out now is we have a totally new start in every possible way. And I think people are now saying, what do I really need to have from this president? What do we really need to see as a country? Not me personally, but as a country. And I think that discussion has changed over the 8 years. Yeah. It's been a long 8 years, yeah, in a lot of ways, for a lot of reasons. But I think with what we're going to see in the next 2 weeks, there's so much potential. And I'm not one for saying he has to fix everything or even can fix everything. I don't think that's true. But I do think that the discussion is about to change.
Yeah.
It is already starting. And so I think we're going to see a lot of books that are going to usher in this fresh discussion about who we are, how we want to be, and what we want. And
so in addition to everything we're talking about here today, there are more to come.
And, oh, definitely.
Yeah, and you had Grace for President, Jill, in your last book, but you also you didn't just think of presidents. You saw a little bit about first ladies, and you've got a couple of books that relate to first ladies.
Absolutely.
And one of them, Cokie Roberts' book, which is fantastic.
Well, and this actually is her newest, this is her newer one, Ladies of Liberty. She also wrote the book called Founding Mothers, but Ladies of Liberty is covering a different group, and she says in her intro here, first a word about what the book is and what it isn't. It is the story told as much as possible in their own words of the influential women in the period between the inauguration of John Adams in 1797 and his son, John Quincy Adams, in 1825. It is not the story of everyday women in the late 18th and early 19th centuries, many of whom had much harder lives than the elite women who had the ears of the founding fathers. Because I wanted to focus on the story, not the writings, I've modernized and corrected the spelling and punctuation to make the letters and journals easier to read. And one of the ladies that is featured in here, in fact, is Mercy Otis Warren, mm-hmm, who was born in Barnstable, Massachusetts in 1728. As it says, she benefited from a rare advantage for a girl of her day. She was educated with her brothers until they went off to Harvard. She then married James Warren, who championed her political and literary pursuits. In the mid-18th century, as the colonists chafed under British tyranny and taxes, the Warren home in Plymouth throbbed with revolutionary fervor. So it's a great read. And Cokie Roberts does very readable books.
Oh,
I think
her books are fantastic. And she really you get a whole new perspective on these women. She really dug up some wonderful letters and writings
and gives us a wonderful
view of who these people were.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that we really are going to miss in our new age that we live in is all these letters that these historians draw from the journals,
writing,
the letters.
That's already being discussed out there.
A lot of these books, that's what they're drawing from. The archives at the National Archives, the Library of Congress archives.
Yeah, I hate to see a book written on emails later down the line.
That's what's going to happen if they haven't been deleted. Also, Margaret Truman wrote a book on first ladies, an intimate group portrait of White House wives, which is a little bit fluffier. It's a little bit fluffier, but it's sort of interesting, her perspective, of course. And she says that, for one thing, talking about presidents, almost all the people in Washington, D.C. are there because they want to be at the white-hot center of power. The ones with the most power, members of Congress and the president, have the added assurance that the American people have sent them there. But on the other hand, a first lady, as Lady Bird Johnson has noted in her gentle Southern way, has been chosen by only one man, the president, and it is highly unlikely that he was thinking about her as first lady when he proposed. Right. And she does do chapters in very, like, the worst first lady, which she talks, a lot of people think that's Mary Lincoln, but she says, no, it wasn't Mary Lincoln. And then she goes on to talk about Florence Kling Harding, who apparently was just as bad as her husband. So it's a dishy book.
Okay, and you've got a couple other books here.
I did. I brought a reference book called The Look It Up Book of Presidents, which was first published in 1968 by Wyatt Blasingame. But it has now been updated to include Barack Obama. There's several pages in the back. And it includes all kinds of nifty things. Fast facts about presidents, a list of electoral votes by state. And in the back, in the appendix, there's a whole section on the 2000 election and what happened.
And what happened, yeah.
In that Al Gore received the popular vote, but George Bush, in a court action, received the presidency. And so they've even updated it with that. And
I could see this as a basis for some great trivia questions
the
trivia game.
Absolutely. And also, sort of, if you had somebody who, you know, a young student who was interested in history, this is the kind of book that they could go back to over and over again, or as a good homework resource.
Sure. And I have to say, if you're looking for trivia, you can't do better than the Presidential Book of Lists. From most to least, elected to rejected, worst to cursed, fascinating facts about our chief executives.
He even in the book lists the number of times they were listed in the book.
Those
who are listed the most times in the book, those who are listed the least times in the book.
Yeah, it's got every little detail, you know, the tallest, the shortest, the and so forth and so on.
And now that you both we don't usually have where you two bring the same books, but this, you have a book here that you both brought.
Yes, I
which
do.
Is,
I'll tell you what, I'll do the Washington, you can do the letters.
Okay. All right.
I could not walk away from
it's the cover, isn't it?
It's the cover. Yeah. As soon as I pulled it out and saw this wonderful picture of Washington, you know, the classic picture of Washington with a fried egg in the center of his face.
Right.
I knew I had to pick it up. And it's called Failures of the Presidents, From the Whiskey Rebellion and War of 1812 to the Bay of Pigs and War in Iraq. Both the people who contributed to this book, Thomas J. Crowell.
Who is the same guy?
Are both historians. This book is loaded with photos and posters and everything you can think of. And what it does is, for every single president, from the beginning on, it picks the one thing that just went to hell in a handbasket on their watch. Or something that they thought might work and really disintegrated.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I really probably wouldn't have given James Madison the entire weight of the War of 1812, but they do. And for John Kennedy, it's the Bay of Pigs. Right. For Richard Nixon, it's the bombings in Cambodia. But in between, you know, the presidents that we know really well are all these other presidents who just encountered major issues on their watch. Everything from internal rebellions to graft, to other kinds of crime, to failed attempted wars, some that we know well, some that we don't know at all. So everybody's had their issues in that office.
And the other book that you both brought is Dear Mr. President?
Dear Mr. President, Letters to the Oval Office from the Files of the National Archives. And it is, I just love this book because they reproduce a lot of the letters themselves. So you see the letterhead, you see the signatures, you see the handwriting. But one of the letters that really struck me was a letter that had been written by the Smothers Brothers to President Johnson, apologizing for having made so much fun of him on their show. And what's incredible is that he writes back the loveliest letter, Johnson does, Dear Mr. Smothers, and he says, in part, and this letter. It is part of the price of leadership of this great and free nation to be the target of clever satirists. You have given the gift of laughter to our people. May we never grow so somber or self-important that we fail to appreciate the humor in our lives.
Oh, wow.
I just thought that was a fabulous
letter. Yeah, I bet there's some really interesting letters in there. Yeah,
there is great stuff. And there's one to there's one from a kid writing to Ronald Reagan saying, my name is Andy Smith. I'm a seventh grader. Today, my mother declared my bedroom a disaster area. I would like to request federal funds to hire a crew to clean up my room.
That is funny. All right, let's go to Dana. He's giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Dana.
Hi, good morning to you and your guests. Yes, I hope, I haven't read any books specifically on the presidents, but I'm hoping someone, well, if they haven't done it already, I hope someone will write a book on the controversy surrounding the 2000 and 2004 elections, because right. I really think there's some serious case about how the elections were hijacked by the W administration.
Well, Dane, I think that was you mentioned that in one of the books.
I do think there is at least one book out there on that topic, okay. But I don't remember the title off the top of my head.
And there was a mention in it in the failures
yes,
of the presidents.
And, yes,
actually, I tuned in late.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, but thank you for your thought, and I'm sure there are others who would be interested in reading a book like that. And Dana, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And in our last minute and a half or 2 minutes that we have here, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Jill, is I was reading something, and I think it was in the Globe maybe yesterday, about with this in this time of the budget cuts and where we're seeing all this downsizing, that libraries are really seeing a resurgence, lots of people. And I'm wondering if that's what you're seeing.
Absolutely. We are. In fact, one of my shelvers said the other day, I've never seen so much material coming back. It is incredible. DVDs, CDs, books, everybody's finding a way to save money. And let me tell you, your public library is a great way to save money. And people are realizing that. So we are having a landslide business. Absolutely.
Yeah, and of course, that raises concerns about budget cuts at the libraries.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a terrible thing. But when budgets are crunching, libraries often get crunched. So certainly, we've already seen some libraries in the state get cut, and we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Right. Well, you know, in Philadelphia, they were going to close 11 of the city's libraries to save money, and people basically hit the streets in front of the mayor's office.
Said,
and so he said he'd wait. Right. They didn't want their libraries in their communities were centers of stability and calm.
Right. I would bet that used book sales are up too.
I would think so.
You've got a new journal. We talked about this in one of the past shows. You've got this little journal of books to check out.
I started it a year ago, and that's what it's called, Books to Check Out. It looks like an old-fashioned library card on the front. And I told myself that I would try to keep up with it for a year, and I did. And at the end of 2008, I had read 30 novels and nonfiction. In fact, it was tilted towards nonfiction. And I thought it was a lot of fun to both do it, but also to use it and go back and look at what I had done. It was my own little personal reference.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And this is how quick it works here. Joel called in and says Dana should read Gore Vidal's 1876. So Dana, there's Joel's suggestion for you. And Jill Erickson, Melanie Lowers, as always, thank you both.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.